In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
There's an old saying, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. Although in this case, the best laid plans of producers and publicists often go awry. And that's certainly what happened last week. We had lined up an interview with today's guest, Cheryl Chumley, but at the last moment, it turned out there was a huge scheduling conflict and we had to postpone until this week. But that's okay, because there's even more to talk about this week. Last week was going to be entirely focused on President Trump's executive orders and that whirlwind first week. This week, we have a second week to also talk about, not to mention the embarrassing confirmation hearings both last week and this. After being repulsive and horrid in the first week of hearings, it's like the Democrats met over the weekend and said, you know, we just weren't horrid and repulsive enough. And for those of you listening from outside of Oregon, I can assure you that Oregon's own Senator Ron Wyden is every bit as horrid and repulsive as he seems. Sorry about that, America. Thankfully, the Democrat senators are making sure that even more Democrats will leave the Democrat Party. It's been a very busy couple of weeks at the White House, where, as promised, Trump has been signing a slew of executive orders to not only get America back on track, but simultaneously undo so much of the damage Biden did to America these last 4 years. That process is going to take some time, especially since a lot of those executive orders are going to face legal challenges. There is a lot to talk about, so let's get right down to things. I'd like to welcome Cheryl Chumley to the show. Cheryl is an online opinion editor, commentary writer, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for Washington Times. She's also the author of several books, and like us, she approaches things from a Christian conservative perspective. Cheryl, it's great to talk to you today.
Yeah, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So just kind of as a quick overview, 30,000 foot type of thing, what did you make of Trump's first week, and was it successful in your view?
Yeah, Trump's first week, he came out swinging, right? And, I mean, he just, executive order after executive order was signed. I'm not a big fan of executive orders, but we're at this sort of odd place in America where the executive branch has to quickly undo what the previous executive branch did.
Yes.
And then hopefully Congress steps in and does their job. But, you know, his executive orders were all aimed at turning back the clock on Joe Biden's unconstitutional and in many instances un-American orders and agendas. And so, you know, he came out swinging. He made several campaign promises that were fulfilled in his very first week, immigration being the top one. And I just think that he has surrounded himself with people this time who will carry forth that agenda well beyond the first week. We already see Congress perhaps codifying some of the orders that Trump has issued. And if so, if that takes place, that will be a good thing for America.
Yes, and I certainly liked his immediate moves there on immigration. That was a big issue for a lot of people. Poll after poll, I think, surprised a lot of the Democrats that showed overwhelming support for not only immigration reform, but actually deporting and mass deportations of immigrants. So that, I think, was a bit of a surprise. Was there anything that didn't happen that first week that you wish would have?
You know, it was such a flurry the first week. There really wasn't anything that I saw he did that wasn't necessary. And I didn't see anything that he did not do that was an immediate need. The big need was immigration, right? That was the emergency thing that we really needed to put the plug at the border once again, and he did that. And everything else that comes now, you know, there's no huge rush for him to bring it forth. And so to answer your question, no, I can't think of anything that, you know, he should have done the first week that he didn't.
Well, I think Walter Kern had summed it up pretty well last week. He said 5 days ago, America didn't even know who the real president was. And now there's practically a live stream from the Oval Office. And President Trump seems to be at his desk from 7 a.m. to 2:30 a.m. every day. signing documents and chatting with anybody who drops by, and it's true. But, you know, he brings up kind of an important point there. We just really don't know who is actually acting as president. I mean, if he wasn't actually in charge, then who really was?
Yeah, you know, under the previous administration, well, first and foremost, Joe Biden, we had indications from the campaign trail that mentally speaking, he wasn't up to the job. Because if you remember, he campaigned mostly from the basement. The Democrats sold it as a help need for Joe Biden to stay in the basement because of COVID. But really, it seemed to me more as something that gave Joe Biden the ability to campaign at all. He sat there on camera with his wife next to him, who sort of, you know, jolted him on the side whenever he seemed to dip off into some rabbit hole or lose his train of thought. And then over the 4 years of his administration, you know, it was obvious that he was not leading. And the whispers were this was Barack Obama's third term. And I think that's exactly what we saw. And then in the last final few months of his administration, we didn't see anything from him at all in terms of leadership. It was almost as if Kamala Harris had taken over as president. And then when she lost, we sort of went without a leader at all the couple months in between the election and the inauguration. So it is good to have a strong leader back in the White House.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think it was pretty interesting that almost from the day of the election when Trump was shown to have won, you had it was like the entire international community recognized that Trump's the real leader right now. And why even bother to try to talk Biden anymore? But, you know, you mentioned a really important point there. You know, with all the executive orders, they're impressive. I agree with you that they're only as temporary as the next president comes along, unless Congress steps in. I really think more than anything, what we saw that first week was Trump's leadership. And that, to me, is what was so impressive. I mean, he's projecting strength that says America's back. We're going to get things going again. And buckle up, it's getting exciting. And, you know, we really are, you know, coming into the end of the second week here, and we're only just getting started. And what a contrast that is from Biden's first week when he was busily undoing the things that Trump's first term had been so successful and really actually sabotaging his own second term by flooding the country, or his own one term by flooding the country with illegal immigrants. So I think that leadership is so key right now, and I hope that that's what we're going to continue to see going forward and hope that Congress does not sabotage him.
Yeah, it really was a week, not just of a flurry of executive order signings, but more importantly, a week of messaging. Messaging to America that this is the reentry of America into the golden age, as Trump just described it, but also messaging around the world that this is a complete 180 degree shift on the previous administration. Borders would be closed. America wasn't going to take marching orders from other nations that had exploited our cushy economic incentives for them to do business here. And more than that, you know, one of the executive orders that struck me as monumental was the definition of male and female, yes, and that there are only two sexes. And that just sent a ripple effect through our business community, through our colleges and public school community, that I think has been a long time coming, a return to sanity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of funny how the party of science is a science denier when it comes to genders. Okay, we are just getting started with Cheryl Chumley. She is the online opinion editor, commentary writer, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for Washington Times. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Cheryl Chumley. She's the online opinion editor, commentary writer, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for the Washington Times. She also has several books, and one of which we're going to be talking about later on in the show. But we started the show talking about Trump's first week. I thought it was really interesting how the second week started. Trump is out there golfing, and it came out that Colombia was going to refuse to take in any of our immigration resettlement flights. And then in the span of one hole of golf, Trump had that completely reversed, where the president of Colombia had came out with this whole grandiose statement about how he's going to defend his country and Trump's a bully, basically. And then by the end of it, he's not only conceded, but he's also offering his own presidential plane to fly them in. I mean, how awesome was that?
Yeah, and I think that goes toward the importance of what I was saying a minute ago about a strong narrative, right? Because, you know, leadership is part policy, right? Setting in direction the proper policies that you want to bring forth. But it's also about an attitude which sort of is resolute and determined. And certainly Donald Trump brings that type of character to the forefront. And when he says something, I think Colombia was trying to test him on his border control. And they were under the impression that Donald Trump might just bow down to the pressures from the media and the Democrats and sort of go wishy-washy on border control. And the president saw very quickly, the Colombia president saw very quickly that this is not going to be the case. And so if you look at that as sort of a test of how strong Trump was going to stand on his agenda, then we can check that box, right? And it sent a message clearly around the world to other governments who may have been thinking that this administration was going to be a little bit beholden to the Democrats, a little bit scared of offending the media, and bow down a little bit and water down a little bit the agenda. It sends the message, well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was just so head-spinning quickly how Colombia changed tune on that. Very optimistic for those of us in America who have been watching over the last few years the compromises and compromises that keep coming from our political elected leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a pretty good take on all of that, is how not only was that sending a message, but it shows such a real change from how things had been. Where in the past, if we had said that we want to resettle those immigrants and they had said no, it would have sent off a firestorm at the State Department. There would have been a month of meetings and trying to figure out how we can be more inclusive and all the other nonsense. And then at the end of it, after a month goes by, nothing would have happened and we would have just conceded to whatever they had wanted. And that's done. And I really love that, because Trump is sending that message, don't mess with me. This is a man, I firmly believe he thinks he's on a mission from God now. He's mentioned that on the campaign trail, that he believes he was saved by God to make America great again. And I think we're seeing that.
Yeah, this is, you know, a clarity of leadership, right? But it's also a moral compass that I see coming forth from Donald Trump's administration already, just in the first few days. And yeah, he said that in his inaugural speech, that he thought God saved him for a purpose. And he also promised that we would not lose our country, we would not lose our Constitution, we would not lose our God under his White House tenure. And that's all very optimistic and inspirational to those in America, like myself, of Christian conservative viewpoints and worldview, who have just seen the Democrat Party and the leftists and many even in the Republican Party degrade and utterly scorn the Founding Father principles upon which our nation was built. So, I look at Trump and I see his leadership, not just political, but also a little bit spiritual, a little bit morally compassed toward mm-hmm. recognizing the individual rights that we have in this nation, given by a creator, not handed out by government.
Exactly. And I know that your book really deals with that these are God-given rights. And like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Even before Trump took office, I think in one of the more shocking things I ever remember from a presidential transition, in literally the minutes before Trump took that oath of office, Biden was out there pardoning his entire family. I found that to be incredibly shocking. He had already pardoned his son for this blanket 10-year, absolving him of all sins from 2014 to 2024. He did the same thing with Fauci and General Milley. I've never seen that level of blanket pardons, but then his own family as well. I mean, can you admit any more bluntly that, yes, they were involved in all of these crimes and all of the money and influence peddling that we always suspected they were?
Well, if the pardons themselves weren't astonishing enough and unprecedented enough, the fact that we're talking about preemptive pardons here over a a period of 10 years, right? So for Hunter Biden, he got like a 10-year pardon over things that weren't even named yet as being accusations or allegations against him. And that's something that just, I don't even know if that would stand up to the test of courts. If you accused him of something and it fell under that 10-year period and it was something that was provable, I don't understand how that would stand to our judicial smell test of upholding law and order in this country. But really, that's the bigger astonishment that came out of the previous administration, that the pardons were bad enough, but the preemptive pardons for a set period of time. So anything that you look back on in this individual's history, not just Hunter's, but others in his family, and as you mentioned, Fauci and other political figures and bureaucrats, anything that you look back, it automatically they get a get-out-of-jail-free card, a total pass. It's just, you know, the only recourse we in America have to be comforted, I guess, by this astonishing act of Joe Biden is that we believe in a higher power. We believe in a higher accountability. So they may skate accountability and consequences in this lifetime, but one day they will face accountability that they will not be able to skate so easily.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, I'm going to talk about immigration reform and deporting illegals. That was a big promise of Trump. We'll talk about that next with Cheryl Chumley. She's the opinion editor, commentary writer, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for the Washington Times. We'll put links to those up on iSpyRadio.com. This week's show is 15-05. And welcome back. We're talking about the first couple of weeks there of the Trump administration and how that's getting going. We're talking with Cheryl Chumley. She's the opinion editor, commentary writer, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for the Washington Times. And Cheryl, before we move on to immigration, because there's some co-conspirators there with that, I'd like to get your take on. But one of the orders that, again, was a fulfillment of a promise is that Trump ordered the declassification of JFK, RFK, and MLK assassinations there. I don't know how much you follow that or what you expect to see out of that, but to me, more than anything, what that really starts is the process of restoring trust in government. You can't have trust in government if you keep all of these secrets buried. Are you expecting anything from those declassifications?
You know, that's hard to answer, right? Without being able to look at the documents immediately, it's hard to just take a guess on that. I would say that it would clarify much of the questions Americans have had for years and years and years now over JFK. I mean, this has been an ongoing conspiracy theory, right, to put that in quotation marks, because too many people believe that obviously something happened that to counter the government's narrative. So I would assume that it would put to rest the questions, but without knowing exactly all the information that's going to be brought forward, it's hard to give a good answer on that. I just think, you're right. You hit the nail on the head. It does go for accountability and transparency in government.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think that's the key issue out of all of that, and I'm hoping to see a lot more of this. They've already started to declassify some of the information about COVID, the origins of the Wuhan lab and all the rest. And, you know, you just can't trust it. You think of it from what the government is trying to do, which is they want to be trusted, but we're not going to show you all of this information. And you'll just have to trust us that it's really not as nefarious as it looks. That's not how you build trust.
No, it's not. And it's sort of, you know, when you say that, it sort of reminds me of when Pfizer was ordered to release its documents about how it determined efficacy of their COVID shot. And they tried to postpone and delay release of the documents for 75 years,
right,
which is kind of like acknowledging we know that we weren't truthful with the American public.
Exactly.
And so we want to cover it up even more, but pretend like we're being truthful. So there really is no good reason why the JFK documents especially haven't been released for so many years now. And I just hope it does put to rest an issue that has been lingering in the back of so many Americans' minds for so long.
Yeah, well, my own personal prediction on that one is I think we're going to have more questions than we had before after that's all released, is my guess. So one of the chorus lines that we kept hearing from Joe Biden and all of the other Democrats when they were going after Trump is no one is above the law. Apparently, that's not true when it comes to immigration, because it's perfectly fine that they're in there breaking the law. And I love that first press conference that Trump's new press secretary held, when somebody asked her, well, of the thousand some immigrants that were just arrested this last week, how many of those were criminals? And she said all of them. If they're here in America illegally, then that makes them criminals. And I love that. Do you think that we're going to see continuing panic by those on the left that, oh my gosh, all these immigrants are being deported? And also, do you think that Homan is actually going to start arresting government officials that are aiding and abetting it?
So to answer the second first, Tom Homan has been pretty clear that this administration, whether through the Justice Department or Homeland Security, is going to take whatever measures necessary to counter the government officials who want to continue their sanctuary city or sanctuary community policies that fly in the face of this administration's orders. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and honestly, it wouldn't take but one arrest. It wouldn't take but one, punitive outreach against one of these Democrat leaders to make the rest fold and comply. And as far as what we can expect going forward from Democrats and those who object to a tough border policy, of course they're going to continue their crying about it. I just posted a piece this morning. There was on the Washington Times, there was a meeting, a remote Zoom meeting of House Democrat leaders, and they are strategizing now for ways to strongly counter all things MAGA, right? And the border is a top concern to them. They want to keep first, whatever reason, they want to keep the borders porous here in America. And so they're already regrouping behind the scenes, strategizing ways to counter Donald Trump's agenda, using the courts if they have to, using the media, of course, and social media to create this narrative that, whatever Donald Trump does, whatever border control policies come forth, they're discriminatory, they're racist, they're intolerant, anti-American. So, yeah, we can expect 4 years of that, really.
Yeah. So if you had to lay a bet right now in terms of who is most likely to derail Trump's agenda, especially in terms of immigration, but, it's a pretty wide-ranging question there. Would you lay that more on Democrats or more likely on Republicans?
Oh, Democrats, without a doubt. I mean, Democrats are the ones that have been fighting for years to keep the borders wide open. Republicans have not done as good a job protecting borders as they should have, mostly because of their business interests. I've covered for years and years the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and their embrace of more open border policies to give cheap labor to their business interests. And that's a failing of the Republican Party.
Yes.
The Democrats just want borders open for their political reasons, for their political ambitions, because they really think letting in so many from other nations will give them the best chance to recruit all these new batches of Democrat voters that will secure their own seats for years and even decades to come.
Well, I definitely agree that I think Democrats will try harder. I get worried that there's just because they've got such narrow margins there in the House and Senate. I do get worried that they're going to either derail one of his appointees or find some way to vote against some critical piece of legislation that I think Republicans might be more able to. But you're right. I certainly agree that Democrats are certainly going to be trying a lot harder. Okay, we are up against a break. Coming back, we're going to talk about those co-conspirators when it comes to immigration. that, we're talking today to Cheryl Chumley. She is the online opinion editor, commentary writer, and hosts the Bold and Blunt podcast for the Washington Times. She has several books out there, and we're going to hopefully get to that either this segment or next. But before we leave the topic of illegal immigration, one of the things that has really bothered me for a number of years is that we have, and this kind of will lead into, I think, discussion of your book, we've got faith organizations down there helping the government, helping immigrants break our own government's laws. You've got Catholic churches, charities down there, at least two that I'm aware of. You've got Lutheran Services. There are other faith-based, allegedly, NGOs. They've taken in millions of dollars, in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars, specifically to help with unaccompanied minors. And yet 300,000 children disappeared under Biden. I think it's actually 320. Trump has found, I think they had said somewhere around 75,000 of them so far, but churches were actively aiding cartels, the smuggling of kids. And some of those have probably either ended up in child labor or sex trafficking or worse. And this feels like a real stain on churches and faith organizations. I mean, if you set aside the child trafficking side of things, the churches were profiting from helping people break the law and undermine our own rule of laws. You know, maybe I'm crazy, but that doesn't exactly seem like the proper role for churches.
No, it doesn't. And it's born of the misguided teachings and preachings of some of these churches and faith organizations and nonprofits that Jesus, if he were walking about today, would be a socialist, right? And that there's no such thing as an illegal citizen, because the word illegal is something that they look at as a negative tag to it that goes to a person's actual being. And so, you know, if you go back and you start having churches teach more truthful biblical principles, then a lot of those faith-based organizations that gather money from contributors based on their open border type protections of illegals, they wouldn't be able to get as much money. But we're at this point in America now where, you know, a lot of the problems that are taking place politically are coming from churches that aren't preaching properly and truthfully about Bible principles and Bible truths. And, you know, the idea of Jesus being a socialist, I find specifically abhorrent, because if you read the Bible and you look at what Jesus taught, he never talked about taking from Peter to pay Paul. He never talked about the government doing this or the government's role was to do that. It was always the individual, out of love for Jesus, is supposed to do certain actions, certain charitable actions. So these groups, I think under Donald Trump's administration, are going to be reeled in a little bit. And I think just the awareness of the names of some of these groups who have been embracing open border policies have first surprised many individuals in America. But second, I think that they're going to lose many of their donors, because now there's an awareness generated about their true agendas.
Yeah, absolutely. I do know that they've already cut off the funding to the NGOs. Thank goodness for that. I mean, a lot of these, that was their entire funding sources, was federal government to help with this kind of breaking of our own immigration laws. The other aspect of that too was that, how did 320,000 kids going missing somehow be acceptable under the Biden administration? I don't understand that. I mean, how does 320,000 some missing children not have the media on a constant rampage? We certainly know that would have been happening if Trump was in office, but for some reason it's okay when it's a Democrat.
Yeah, that is a complete and utter despicable failure of mainstream media, of corporate media, right? Because most in the media who have large platforms lean left, hate MAGA, hate the conservatives that support a MAGA movement, and they basically carry the water for the Democrat Party. Speaking from personal perspective, I've been in the media for nearly 30 years now, and I've seen it from the very small newspapers and organizations that I used to work at covering community journalism all the way up to the national level that I cover now. I've seen firsthand that journalists purposely bend over backwards to cover for Democrats who are very often their friends, and meanwhile, all of a sudden discover their watchdog roles when it comes time to covering something a Republican does. So it's a partnership between the Democrat Party and many in the media that have allowed 300,000 plus children, sadly, to just disappear into thin air in America.
Yeah, well, we saw that the Democrats and Biden were perfectly okay with these transgender surgeries and the mutilation of these children permanently. These are life-altering surgeries that they were okay with, and I really hope that going forward we can all start agreeing again that kids ought to be off limits. Kids deserve to be protected. Their innocence deserves to be protected, and I really hope that that's what we're going to see here. We only got a couple of minutes here with you in this segment. And before we leave these first couple of weeks, it was interesting to listen to some of the hearings from Cash Patel, Pam Bondi as well, and I didn't catch much of Tulsi Gabbard. But one of the things that you kept hearing Democrats saying is they wanted to make sure that there wasn't going to be political retribution, which boils down to we don't want Trump to do to us what we did to Trump. So, but at the same time, these were people that were violating laws, that were using the Department of Justice for their own personal means and going after political opponents. Do you think we'll find a way to hold these people accountable?
Well, the ones who have been pardoned, probably not, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't still bring them in for congressional hearings and make known wide in public about, you know, their statements on record or whatever we can discover behind the scenes about what they did. But, yeah, I don't think accountability is ever going to be seen and experienced by the American people. It's just some of these people, who have been sheltered, right? Who have been sheltered under Democrat control of the House and Senate and the White House for years.
Yeah. Well, it's sad, but I don't think Democrats learn their lessons until somebody does to the Democrats what the Democrats have done to others, and that's just kind of a fact of life. All right, coming up, we're going to be talking about getting back to God. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Cheryl Chumley. She is the online opinion editor and also a writer there at the Washington Times. She has several of her own books out there, one of which is God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. We're going to be starting to talk about that. But before we get there, I mentioned previously that Trump really believes that he was saved from those assassination attempts for a reason. And how much of that, taking that direction, do you think is due as far as Trump doing some of what he's doing already and the urgency with which he's doing, how much of that do you think is taken from that he really does, in fact, believe that he's on a mission from God?
Well, I think, as with anyone, if you believe that you're here on earth with a mission from God, then you take things a little bit more seriously than just sort of drifting through your days, doing whatever you feel like doing, right? So I think he truly is drawing some strength and purpose from that belief. But I also would like to add to that, you know, I've seen some people in the media take pot shots at that statement of Trump's and try and make him seem like this religious nut or whatever. And anybody who has faith in God believes that everybody here is created for a purpose by God, right? Like, we're all put here on earth at particular times, chosen by God to complete certain tasks and missions that he created for each and every one of us. Some of us have more notable and public positions, like Donald Trump. Others of us go through life doing God's mission, but we never make it into the media or we're not all over the news. So I just, to put that statement of his in context, I just think that goes for all Christians, all believers. We're all here, saved by God on a day-to-day basis to accomplish his will.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with all of that. As far as your book here, God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths, and we'll put a link again to that in the show notes of today's show, which is 15-05. And, you know, I'm truly of the opinion that America can never be saved unless Americans get saved and get right with God. And I really hope that we can stop pretending that God is somehow not important and not crucial to Americans' foundation and future. And I'm encouraged by some of what we saw in the election there, especially in the waning months of that, where there seemed to be a revival going on, especially among young people. And I thought that was so encouraging. Can you talk to us about that?
Oh, didn't you? I thought the same. When I saw all those college campuses around America where they would just have grassroots springing of all these calls to faith and prayer that would last not just for an hour or two, but actually go into days and days, I thought, wow, we are really awakening to the need in this nation that we do need God in charge. And it's not just a matter of spirit in America, right? I mean, everybody in the world needs God. That's just a given. But in America, it's crucially important for our political structure to have God at the helm. Because if we don't, then what happens is government moves into the roles and spots that are supposed to be filled by God. And this is why exactly I wrote God Given or Bust, that it's important to pay attention to politics and culture and to get involved in politics and culture as a Christian, to bring those faith and particularly Judeo-Christian beliefs into the political systems and into the culture. But it's more important to make the argument that the bigger war in America is not in the politics, mm-hmm. the world of politics, but in the spiritual realm. It's putting God back in charge, because then and only then can we reclaim our American exceptionalism, which is God-given individual rights and liberties, and preserve them for the long term.
Well, how do we get Christians more involved and less afraid of sharing their faith in public, and especially when it comes to politics and getting involved in government? I mean, prior to the election, about a month or so out, there was speculation that up to 100 million Christians might sit out the election in 2024. And it was stunning to me that Christians would ever think of sitting that out. That's the election equivalent of the Edmund Burke saying, all it takes for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. I mean, Christians sitting out the election is the variant of that. The only thing necessary for evil to get elected is for good men to not vote. I'm sure that in writing your books, you ran into probably a lot of that thinking, didn't you? That somehow Christians shouldn't be involved in politics.
Yeah, I think we run into, you and I probably run into that all the time, right? That there is that line of thought in the Christian camp that God commands me to live in this world, not of it, and so I will remove myself from politics and culture, and I will simply hand out Bible tracts and try and evangelize, and that's it. And then there are also other commands in the Bible to obey your leaders because God has put them in charge, and that doesn't really apply to America, a nation of by and for the people form of governance, right, where we elect, but we're still in charge of our political leaders. And so you ask how to get Christians involved in politics and culture, there is no really easy solution, right? There's no just roll the arms that has to be made and that's it. It's just a constant reminder of the Christian duty to, as you point out, if we fail to involve ourselves in this world, in the politics and in the culture, then we only have ourselves to blame when the politics and culture become infiltrated with evil and demonic forces. We can't complain if we don't fight.
Yeah. Well, and I totally agree with you that we are definitely fighting demonic forces. And there's an element of, you know, when I hear people say that churches shouldn't be involved, and especially when I hear pastors say that churches shouldn't be involved in politics, it makes you wonder if there's something deeper going on there, rather than just, you know, somebody thinking, oh, well, that's the right way to go. You almost wonder if churches are being infiltrated. Whether you want to get into the demonic side of things of that, or just simply they're trying to sabotage the role of the church, which I think itself is a demonic aspect. But we know for certain that the FBI was actually infiltrating churches, and so you look at that. Okay, so if you're trying to keep people 100 million voters out of elections, I mean, what better way than to sabotage churches and convince them they shouldn't be involved?
Yeah, and I don't really understand how they're defining politics, right? Because if you read the Bible, it can get very political.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some of the morality that's laid out there, you can look around in the world and see how that plays out in culture and politics. So how can you preach truthful, biblical principles without involving yourself to some extent in what's going on in the political and cultural worlds of today? It just seems a complete watering down of the gospels of the Bible and of how God wants his people to live.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. He needs us to be his example in the world, and when you're removing yourself from society, that's clearly not what God wants of his people. All right, we will wrap things up with Cheryl Chumley after this. And welcome back. In our final segment now is Cheryl Chumley. She's an online opinion editor, commentator, and host of the Bold and Blunt podcast for the Washington Times. We'll put links to those up on iSpyRadio.com. This week's show is 15-05. We'll also link up her book, God-Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. And, you know, you mentioned that these rights are God-given. Why is it that we have gotten so far away from that? Because that was truly the foundation of America, and yet for some reason now it's all about, there's a major shift right now in society thinking that it's the government that gives you those rights. How do we miss that in school?
Yeah, well, in schools, right, there has been a strategic dumbing down of students, particularly when it comes time to teaching truthful history and civics, right? And part of that strategy has come from the Democrat Socialists of America, DSA. You can go to their website, which I have done on several occasions over the years, and see how they have actively recruited members to go into the school systems and become teachers and administrators as a way of teaching for the long term the socialist way to go. So when you have that sort of infiltration, it's very difficult to counter, particularly when, and this is another reason, you have a breakdown of the family unit. Mm-hmm. It used to be what was taught in the schools could be untaught at home by parents if they saw the need to. But nowadays, you have many broken homes, you have single-parent homes, you have homes with parents who work 2-3 jobs, and so kids don't have that solid direction at home either by parents who are properly trained in the school system about American exceptionalism principles. And then you have a breakdown of faith in society at large. And so this is the third reason, as we move farther and farther down a path of secularism and atheism, we lose the concept of God in culture. And if you take out God from the equation, God-given rights and liberties, then you naturally have government in its place. You can't have God-given rights for the people if people don't understand God, if they don't know who God is and insist on him being in charge in our country.
Yeah.
And then fourth, I would just quickly say, you have a Democrat Party that has been corrupted by far leftist influences.
Yes.
This isn't the party of JFK days. It's not even the party of Bill Clinton days, where we may have disagreed politically, but by and large, the Democrat Party under Clinton still loved America, didn't want to actively destroy America. I would pinpoint the difference in the Democrat Party taking place under Barack Obama, where you had this sort of determined fundamental shift of American values go forth, and that was continued under Joe Biden. So it's all these forces bringing together the idea that God-given individual rights and liberties, why, that's radical, that's crazy. It's the government that's in charge nowadays. And so this is the war, though, that we need to win in America if we do want to secure our individual rights and liberties for the foreseeable and long-term futures.
Oh, absolutely. And this is from the book description on Amazon. You say American exceptionalism is rooted in the idea that individual rights come from God and government is only in place to preserve and protect those rights. And that is so absolutely true. And I look at that, and when I'm reading that, I immediately flash on what happened in the 2020 election and COVID, that the government apparently forgot that its job is to protect and defend free speech. And yet they did the exact opposite. They were out there censoring speech that it didn't like, whether it was political speech or about COVID and the vaccines and all the rest. You know, there's an element of me that would really like to see people go to jail for that. I don't know that we'll ever get there, but there needs to be some kind of accountability on that.
Yeah, because most of the people in charge of spreading that unconstitutional mandate through the states into the localities have been granted pardons by Joe Biden. And look, under COVID, you raised COVID and all the anti-American agendas that went forth then. It was so numerous and so frequent.
Yes.
That while I was covering this stuff at the Washington Times, I very quickly saw this is worthy of an entire book, which I wrote a book on that as well, Lockdown. So it's just, hopefully we've learned our lessons from that and we won't repeat it. But without God-given rights and liberties, it's too easy to fall back.
Yes.
Into a COVID-type time, expecting government to take care of us again.
Yeah, absolutely right. And to change America in that direction, it can't just be executive orders. It's really going to take an act of Congress as well. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Cheryl Chumley, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Thank you very much for having me, and God bless.
The far left has a reputation for being anti-God, or at the very least, anti-religion. But so much of leftist ideology is entirely belief, to the point that their particular embrace of science is more belief and religion than it is science. Down to its roots, climate change is not science, it deifies the planet, that nature is a goddess and takes preeminence over mankind. It disregards second grade science class, that plants depend on CO2 to make oxygen we need, but somehow CO2 is the enemy, which I guess is really saying mankind is the enemy. The Mayans sacrificed thousands of people to appease the sun and rain gods. Modern day leftists believe we can change the weather by sacrificing trillions of dollars. The left doesn't believe in science, they believe beliefs about science. And their embrace of those beliefs are closer to a religion, a cult, than they are to science and the scientific method. The first American Revolution started in pubs and tea and coffee houses. The second revolution needs to start in churches. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.